Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. Real excited to be here today. We're going to be taking your phone calls all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll also be taking your emails, radio@agphd.com, or you can find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. We're going to be talking about what to put in furrow on corn on today's program and, of course, taking your calls and questions too. Brian, I think it's been interesting. A lot of the discussion this winter has been what we're not going to put in the furrow. And we've heard from some real popular farmers around the country saying, I'm getting away from some of the in-furrow stuff, or at least not going to excess like I used to in-furrow and trying to get it further away.
Yeah, but hold up. We got to talk about that a little bit, and I'm glad this discussion is coming up today, because I have heard especially some high-yield farmers saying, yep, I'm pulling everything out of the furrow. I am absolutely not a believer in pulling everything out of the furrow. Now, here are the reasons why you might want to pull everything out of the furrow. If you've got really sandy soil, very little rainfall, and you're worried about the salt content hurting your crop, I get that. But my point is, use a low salt product, use a low rate, and put water with it. So all three of those things are going to safen this dramatically. You know, number one, the dose always makes the poison. So you could literally put anything in furrow, and I mean anything, if the rate was low enough, okay? But the problem is, if you want to get something out of it, then that's where you want to go with a low-salt product. So we are huge believers in using low-salt products. We farm in a drier area of the United States. I can just tell you firsthand, if you put too much salt in the furrow, that is a bad thing, especially in a dry year, or a dry spring, I should say. So anyway, the other thing is water it down a little bit. There's no reason why you can't have 5 gallons of total solution and 2 or 3 or 4 gallons of that is fertilizer. You absolutely can. Just put a little water with it. It's fine. What that does is it gives you a better spread pattern throughout the furrow, and now you don't have such a tremendous concentration there. It makes it a lot easier for you to get more accurate application, and you don't have little hot spots, you know, where your fertilizer may have turned on and off and on and off and on and off. That's not a good thing. We want a nice even spread in there, and we want to keep that rate relatively low with low salt.
One of the interesting discussions, now we talk about the salt and how it impacts the root system, but when you think about all the microbial products that are going in the furrow and on the seed, we're starting to think about, well, what's the water that we're delivering that product into the furrow with? What's that like? And how much salt is in the fertilizer components that's going in, and how will that impact the microbes and biology that are on these products? It's interesting. It's just way beyond what it was 20 years ago of, all right, I'm putting fertilizer in furrow, that's salt. The salt may impact the moisture situation here, may impact germination, may impact my root system. Now it's an even bigger picture with all the other things that are going in furrow. And that's what I think is going to be fun today when we look at all the things people are putting in furrow. You look at humix and fulvix and bacteria and fungi and plant hormones and all these different things now that are going into the furrow, in addition to insecticides and fertilizer and fungicides and on and on and on.
Wait, no, there is no more on and on and on. That's it. Tell me what else there is. Microbes, fertilizer, fungicide, insecticide. What else?
Well, sugar. Some people are putting essential oils in now. There's, you know, compost and that kind of thing getting stirred up. I don't know anybody dropping it right in the furrow just yet. But compost tea is going in furrow. I mean, there's a number of things. It's crazy how many different things people are trying out there.
Yeah, but are you saying that putting those things in there is going to make your fertilizer damage worse? Or what are you saying?
No, our topic today is what to put in furrow. And what I'm saying is, it used to be a question of, well, are you putting anything in furrow or not? And the only thing people were thinking about was fertilizer.
Gotcha.
Then it became, well, hey, insecticide would be kind of a nice thing. And recently, in the last 5-6 years probably, fungicide has become a popular thing.
Right.
And then you look at all these microbial products. It used to be, well, maybe I'm going to put some soybean inoculant in on my soybeans. But now on corn, you look at all the biology that's getting put in the furrow. It's just amazing to me. And then plant growth hormones, we're talking about, well, what can I do to help improve my root system? And you see in some crops where they're planting little seedlings and they're growing them in greenhouses and then they're going to drop them in the ground, they're putting IBA, a growth hormone, on the root system to improve rooting. Well, there are farmers who have been doing this for years, but they're just dropping it in furrows since they aren't growing the seeds out to start the plants before they put them in the ground. And I don't know, there's going to be a lot more things coming up. It's really a fun time.
Yep, I agree with that. I guess the big thing is, if you're listening today, you're probably going, oh my goodness, I'm not putting anything in furrow today, or maybe I'm putting one thing in. That one of the things that we talk most often about here at Ag PhD is just try some stuff on your farm. Whether it's one or two or three or four things each year, you've got to try a few new things. If you don't try a few new things, how are you going to get any better? Doing the same thing you've always done before is probably going to get you the same results you've always had before. And if you're looking for improvement, try some new things. Just try it in a few acres. I'm not saying spend a fortune or anything like that, but you try a few things and you're going to stumble upon some things that work. If, let's say, you try four things and only one works, that's still a tremendous success because now you found one thing that worked. You do that every year for the next 10 years, you got 10 things that work, and now you're talking big time advancements.
Yeah, the real challenge here is if you're trying all 10 at once and you say, well, that didn't work. Well, of course it didn't. Usually 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals a negative. If you try them one at a time and figure out, oh, okay, well, this works. And now you try the other product. Hey, you know what? Those two work well together. I got additional yield boost. And then you bring a third product in and try it like that. Now you might have something. That's where I look at it. And there is a lot of research being done like that. We've done a lot of those kinds of things over the last number of years on our farm to get to where our program's at today. But I'd love to hear what your program is. What are you putting in furrow on your cornfields? It's going to be today's topic. You can call and join the discussion at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to GrowSmartRewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, Broadcasting from the Morton studio today, and I am excited. There's corn going in the ground in some parts of the country already, and that really gets me fired up thinking, wow, what are we going to do this year? What's the plan going to be? What's going to go in furrow today is our specific topic. We got Becky Jo Smith with Valent with us right now. Thanks for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you for having me as a guest.
Hey, I wanted to ask you about MycoApply EndoPrime, and this is a product that Brian and I have gotten a chance to use now over the last few years here, but you're making changes all the time, and I think it's important for a lot of growers. We get questions on this, and they say, tell me about that. What's going on with mycorrhizae? What do I need to know?
Well, absolutely. The mycorrhizae is something that here not too long ago, I didn't know that much about it either, and it's been really fascinating to learn more about the mycorrhizae that's in the soil. As you know, the soil has a natural population of mycorrhizae already, but Valent's got a product, EndoPrime, MycoApply, EndoPrime SC. Although we're more known for Valor and Nissan and things like that, we do have these other MycoApply products, and it has four unique species of the arbuscular mycorrhizae fungi in it. And so what that mycorrhizae is doing, it's going out there and it's setting up shop in the corn root system so it can go to work for that corn plant all season long. And so it's doing things like going out and once it sets up that shop in the corn roots, it's going out and getting the nutrients that the corn plant might need, like phosphorus and nitrogen and some of the micronutrients like copper and zinc. In addition to water, it's going to go out into the soil where the corn roots can't reach and bring back some water if that plant is under some drought stress that, you know, you may see late in the season, especially around silking time, because we know when there's heat and drought stress during silking, that can really significantly impact your yields.
So many of our listeners... Becky Jo, I was just going to ask you, so many of our listeners have been writing in really since late last summer and definitely through the fall. Hey, I've been waterlogged. I'm really concerned that my native microbes are not going to have very good survival here just due to the excess of water that we've had, and I know I need to add some more things in. So can you talk about mycorrhizae? You mentioned there are some in the soil, but would this be just an ideal opportunity to add some more?
Yeah, it really is, especially if you've got some tillage practices going on. Some of the things that impact mycorrhizae populations are tillage or non-host crops, like if you're coming out of canola or sugar beets, because they don't form that relationship with the mycorrhizae in the soil. So it's good to add that back in. If you've got your ground sitting there fallow over the winter, it's got nothing to feed on. If there's no cover crop, it's also reducing your populations of mycorrhizae. So it's really a good idea to take advantage of a product like this, like the EndoPrime, and be able to inoculate your soil with it when you're going out there this spring in furrow, and put it in there and get that corn plant off to a real good start throughout, not only at the beginning of the season, but throughout the season with the mycorrhizae.
Well, microbes are going to colonize our roots, and it's sure nice if we can control which ones do and get the good guys out there. And it makes a lot of sense to me that we can expand our root network, getting into more volume of soil to bring in nutrients. Can you talk about this with mycorrhizae? You mentioned tillage as being something that's negative towards microbes in general if we're in no-till. What are some of the other things that are good besides just reducing our tillage that could help with microbial survival in our soils?
Well, certainly putting in cover crops. You hear a lot today about putting cover crops in after you take that crop off, because that helps feed the microbes that are out there throughout the winter and helps them survive. So that's certainly one thing that a lot of folks are doing to really boost up that population. The other thing the mycorrhizae does, they secrete this glomalin that helps give that soil structure, the soil super glue. I kind of like to think about it, kind of gives it structure, helps with the water holding capacity. So the more you can be doing to provide a good environment for that mycorrhizae, the better off your soil is going to be, not only this year, but in the future.
Becky Jo, we hear a lot about things that people can do. What do you expect to see, and what kind of yield responses have you been seeing now with MycoApply EndoPrime, and what is roughly the cost to the grower per acre as well?
Yeah, well, the cost is going to certainly vary by whoever they work with, whichever retailers are working with, but we also have MicroApply EndoPrime Corn Confidence Program. So those guys that go out there and use the EndoPrime on their acres, if they're doing like 250 acres, we'll give them $9 back if they don't see a return on investment through increased yield. So it gives them a chance to really try out the product. And on average, we see about 4.5 to 5 bushel an acre increase when folks are using the EndoPrime, and that's across a number of different soil types and yield or trial sites throughout the Midwest. And then certainly when we see drought situations where that really can impact yield, we even see larger increases in yield in those situations. So we've got an opportunity to really take advantage of the mycorrhizae helping that plant throughout the season and giving them the return. But also we've got the Corn Confidence Program there to say, hey, we're going to be there for you. We've got your back if you want to try this product out.
Yeah, that's outstanding. We were talking with Becky Jo Smith with Valent. That is definitely a product you may want to check out. MicroApply EndoPrime, delivering mycorrhizae fungi right in the furrow in your corn planter this year. Hey, Becky Jo, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
All right. Thank you, Darren. Have a good one.
We've got Dave Sender with us with Soil Warrior. Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. How are you guys doing today?
Well, I'm doing good, except for this. We didn't get our desired tillage and fertility applications done last fall, and we're hearing from so many farmers about, okay, what can I put in furrow? What can I put in close proximity to my seed? And how can I best deliver nutrients this year? What's your answer to that? You've got a solution, right?
We sure do, yeah. And needless to say, you're not the only one singing that tune. A lot of guys are in that very same position. With the Soil Warrior, we're able to apply that fertilizer throughout through an entire zone. So we've got a couple different options with regards to how deep and how wide you can make those zones. But you're really getting that that fertilizer blended throughout that entire soil profile. So, you know, there's definitely a safety factor there with the nutrients you're putting down. In fact, I suspect this spring, a lot of farmers are going to be putting down, you know, their full rate of P and K with a pretty healthy dose of nitrogen right in that strip and then planting in right into that strip. We've had a lot of gentlemen speaking more and more of, you know, 2x2 attachments and some in-furrow pop-ups, and they still continue to do that, but I think it's extremely beneficial, especially with the way that this spring is going to be, a lot of work to be done, and needless to say, a very short period of time. Being able to put that full season's worth of P&K down is going to be very beneficial.
You know, there's so much that growers want to put in close proximity to the soil. We were just talking with Becky Jo Smith with Valent about microbial type products. Are you seeing a lot of demand for that and getting questions from growers that are using your equipment?
Yes, we definitely are. And that is continuing to grow year after year. Hearing the conversation that you had with her with regards to that topic, not only the mycorrhizae fungi, your cover crops, and she brought up some really good points with those considerations. And we're getting more and more customers, frankly, that are beginning to want to incorporate cover crop seeding at the time they're doing, in this case, you know, a lot of times they're fall passes, but it's definitely a growing area where I only think that's going to get larger and larger.
Yeah, I can't even tell you, Dave, how many pictures I got of strip tillers who had cover crop in between the strips this year, and guys were just fired up about how that was looking. I've been talking with Dave Sender with the Soil Warrior. Dave, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. We'll be talking to you again going into this spring.
You bet. Have a good day.
Talking about what to put in furrow on corn, we'd love to hear what you're doing. You can give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned. When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation, and patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren live in the Morton studio. Today we're talking about what to put in furrow in corn. Our next guest today is James Lappin. He is with AMVAC. James, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you all doing out there?
Excellent. All right, so we're talking about what we can put in furrow in corn, and this is one of the things going back to years and years ago that we've been talking about for so long now is insecticide down. Well, since we've had a lot of BT corn getting used around the United States and really across the world, we have a lot of farmers that say, well, what do I need to put insecticide on for? There's a little bit of insecticide on my seed corn, and I've got BT corn. So why should I apply an insecticide in furrow? How do you usually respond to those people?
Well, this time of year, we often get that, where should I include that management strategy in my plan? Where am I safer to not include it? Historically, if you're rotating corn and soybeans, corn following corn is where you're more likely going to have a corn rootworm problem. Unfortunately, with all the uncertainties we have in the market, you have factors like rootworm resistance. All of the commercial traits have now exhibited field level resistance somewhere. Doesn't mean you're going to have resistance everywhere, but there's that potential. You have an increased number of single below ground traits being sold. There's more conventional acres being bought. More single traits being bought in the last 2 years. What we've seen for the last 3 years in a row, 16, 17, and 18, is adult beetle populations have actually been on the increase. When we and others do trapping, we're actually finding more beetles, and we're finding them later in the season. So whether you're using an at-plant insecticide or a trait, Over time, those controls diminish. So the later that larva emerged, the more likely you are to see damage. Now, just because you have rootworm feeding doesn't mean you're going to see lodge corn. So weather's a big factor. If we get this continued really cold Arctic cold blast where the ground is frozen and stays frozen most of the winter, then rootworm populations tend to go up the spring following. If we have a really wet spring like we've had the last couple of springs, those populations will go down. So it's really about how do I manage my risk against the pest. If I'm in a corn-on-corn situation, what we've seen is adding a soil-applied insecticide, whether it's a granular or a liquid, has improved the yield in the last 5 years running when we've seen more and more pressure in each of those years. Now, when you start thinking about, well, why am I getting a yield lift if I'm using a trait? Most traits have now refuge in a bag, which means 5 to 10% of those plants are left unprotected. So you're protecting that 5 to 10% of the plants in the bag. In many cases, you have other seed-attacking pests that may be a factor. If you have low-lying areas, heavy manure, you have grass weed escapes or amaranthus water hemp type situations, those can act as a place for insects to harbor as well. So in those areas, you may have increased pressure from other pests. The bottom line is what we've seen is where growers are using either a liquid product like Aztec, or excuse me, a granular product like Aztec or a liquid product like Index on top of their traits, they've been getting about an 8 to 9 bushel lift for the reasons I just described.
Yeah, you know,
the grower needs to think about, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was just writing down some bugs that the BT isn't going to control. And I think first about white grubs, because I'm going to get almost nothing out of the seed treatment. Definitely not going to kill it with the insecticide or with the BT. I got to use insecticide. Even like nematodes with counter, you can have good activity there. Wireworms, seed corn maggot, seed corn beetles. The BT won't do anything. The seed treatment will help, but is that the total solution? No. And then the other thing, when you mention, okay, the rib, yes, I get that when you've got 5, 10%, whatever it is, 15, 20% in some cases, that I have no BT trait in there. I absolutely need the insecticide there. But even on the BT seed, there's going to be feeding before there's going to be death with that insect. So if you have enough feeding, you can still cause some damage there. And it might not just be the feeding that causes the damage. It might be the diseases that get in later. So, yeah, I know there are a lot of reasons, but one question I wanted to ask you, you have a lot of choices in terms of insecticides, everything from Aztec to Counter, Force, Smart Choice. So how does a farmer decide which one of those dry insecticides he's going to use if he is going to use a dry?
Well, for starters, is he already equipped to handle a smart box container? If he is, then Aztec HC or one of our other high concentrate product is our primary recommendation because of the convenience of handling less product, getting across more acres between fills. If he doesn't have that option, if he's got a mechanical box, then he can look at an Aztec bag or he can look at a Counter lock and load. If he's concerned about nematode, the bias would definitely be towards Counter. Our top sellers would be Aztec and Counter in that order. The liquid insecticides have become more popular as of late. So we have both a fertilizer-ready product, Expedient Plus, which is a bifenthrin-based solution. And then we have Index, which is a combination of an OP plus a pyrethroid that's giving comparable control that we see with granular insecticides. So if a grower has a smart box or mechanical system ready to go, he can look at those granular options. If he doesn't have those, he can either look to our smart box incentives or a lower cost way to equip his planter may be one of these liquid systems with a Dosatron with a product like Index. It's going to cost you less per acre, if you will, to get up and running with that type of a product. But again, there are some limitations in terms of fertilizer compatibility.
Yep.
So it really depends on what the grower's management practices are. We have lots of different options. We're happy to sit down, and the grower should be sitting down with his trusted advisor and talking about, here's the type of corn I've chosen, here's what I intend to plant, here's the areas that I'm most concerned about, and developing that strategy with that agronomic advisor.
Yep, I agree. Again, we've been talking to James Lappin with AMVAC. James, thanks for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I hope you all have a good season.
You bet. You too. All right, next we've got Jerry Willem. He's with AgriLiquid. Jerry, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Brian. How are you?
Excellent. I'm going to ask you in advance, but we only have a little bit of time before our break here. Can you hang on with us through the next break even?
Well, of course I will.
All right. Sounds good. Okay. So to start with, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we talk an awful lot about salt versus, just the salt content that you have in furrow. So can you just, as a general statement, talk to us about the damage that salt can do to a plant? Why is salt a concern?
Well, that's a concern because it's going to restrict growth. You might have seen pictures of our grow outs, we call them, where we grow a corn or a soybean seed against plexiglass, and we place some different fertilizers on it so that the roots will grow into it, and they always turn brown and actually stop growth. With certain kinds of high salt or particularly dry banded fertilizer, and that's because of the carriers and that sort of thing that are trying to deliver the fertilizer. And I kind of call that putting the brakes on it, like hitting a stop sign, because it's going to take a little time for that root to recover and then start growing again once the salt is leached out. So if you're going to be running something close to the seed or with the seed, running low salt is the way to go if you want to promote growth.
Do you find that salt problems are worse? I know it's worse when it's dry versus when it's wet, but do you think it's worse when it's hot or worse when it's dry or when it's cold? Hot or cold, which one is worse for salt?
Well, I mean, when it's warm, you're going to have more active growth, and so those roots are really going to be growing faster, and then they'll run into that quicker. And when it's colder, there might be a little bit slower growth and give time for that salt to maybe dissipate some. So, but if it's dry, that's going to be even worse, because particularly even with some liquid fertilizers, they're going to think that's water, and they're going to take it in, but they're taking in fertilizer. And I mean, even with a low salt fertilizer like AgroLiquid's carbon based, it can still cause some injury if it's dry. So, having moist conditions is the best, but having low salt is going to make it even better.
Yeah, we talk an awful lot about this particular topic just because both Darren and I have been out in too many fields where we've seen higher salt products used, a lot of times at higher rates, but still, in those dry springs, like sometimes you will find around the world when people are planting corn, yeah, then we end
absolutely
up with buggy whipped corn plants, and sometimes that can really impact yield. Well, Jerry, hang on with us through this break. We'll come right back with you. We got a few more questions for you. Again, today on the show, we're talking about what to put in furrow in corn. If you've got any questions about that or anything else, you can call us at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run fans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a Soil Warrior on our farm in the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true, AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, and we're talking about what to put in furrow on corn. We'd love to hear what you're doing or what products you're looking at, what kind of strategies you're using. Our phone lines are open all throughout the show today at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email as well, radio@agphd.com. Let's get back to the phone lines. We got Jerry Willem with us with AgroLiquid. And Jerry, we started talking through, you know, some of the issues that guys see in furrow. And this is certainly a space that you've been very familiar with, doing a lot of research over a broad area of the country for years and years now. What are some of the things that you're seeing be very successful?
You make it sound like Jerry's old or something. Usually just saves those jokes for me, Jerry. So sorry about that.
But I'm just trying to set up the credibility here that the reason we got Jerry on the show is he knows a lot of stuff.
Well, I'll hope you still think that after I'm done. But
I apologize in advance, Jerry, if I offended you in any way.
I know you wouldn't do that, Jerry.
Yeah. So Jerry, talking about in-furrow, do you think in a lot of cases it's better to have a blend of different products? So, for example, would you want to put in like your ProGerminator that's got phosphorus and your SureK that's got potassium and maybe a little bit of micronutrients? Do you like just doing one nutrient? I mean, what do you like to see in the furrow?
Well, generally when people are talking to me or us about running in furrow, I mean, there's kind of two purposes. One would be just something to kind of get it started, or a starter pop-up or something like that. And there you're usually just thinking, I just want something to get it going. But even with that, I've seen over the years a little shift in my thinking. I used to just think, all I need is some phosphorus, because we know when it's cold, when you're planting early, yep, phosphorus is not going to be in the soil solution because it needs to warm up, and that's a microbial process to be released from organic matter and from the soil. That's a temperature related. So we have seen a response just to that ProGerminator, which is mostly phosphorus, but also has some nitrogen potassium with it. But over the years, in recent years, we have actually, let me back up. Just like everything, you need to look at your soil test. But here in the upper Midwest, as well as over in the Dakotas and through, you know, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan and such, you're usually going to be needing some potassium, too. And I used to not think that we needed potassium as a pop-up or in a starter, you know, when we're talking about, you know, 2-3 gallons of fertilizer. But we've done work in recent years that showed kind of a blend of the ProGerminator and the SureK, both of which are very low salt, low burning. And if we put a 50-50 blend of that, we've done even better. So I guess I wasn't really thinking that potassium was so critical at the beginning of growth. I was thinking mostly on phosphorus and a little bit of nitrogen, but now I've kind of shifted my thinking because the soil does need some potassium. So if that's the first thing that it's going to tap into when it germinates, it's going to utilize both of those. And we've seen better response
with that blend.
Do you think that could have anything to do with the fact that guys are trying to plant earlier all the time? It just seems like our soil temps are even colder, obviously, because we're planting earlier. Is that why the potassium is paying more today? Or do you think maybe it just always did pay, we just never really looked at much?
I think it's a combination of both. Of course, I know on your show, you're talking about, you know, get out there on the calendar almost just because you have so much to do. Just get it in the ground when you can. And because you got so much to do, if you can plant. And so potassium will also have limited availability early. And just being able to have that blend, there's probably a synergistic effect there as well. So I do like the blend, but I have not had that success. Like if you have, you know, high hundreds and hundreds of parts per million potassium, out west, but in your soils where there is a potassium demand, putting it in as a starter helps. And then that's the starter. But, you know, as with our fertilizer, with our high usability, more efficient, a lot of people are using the agri-liquid to replace, dry other than, your maintenance. But we can put on fertilizer up to 10 gallons per acre with that seed to take care of the majority of your P and K needs. And then you really need to look at a soil test. You don't want to just, some people just say, oh, I just want to put a 50-50 blend on and call it good.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, they can do that, but why not if these days spend the money wisely and put on the ratio of P and K and micros, and we have an infertile sulfur and that sort of thing. Get what you're going to get the most results from is putting it on right, not just a blend.
Hey, I'm glad you mentioned sulfur. That was my next question. Is sulfur, can too much of that, well, let me phrase this a different way. How do you feel about sulfur in general as a product to use in furrow? Are you worried much about the safety of that sulfur? A lot of guys are short on sulfur and they want to use it, but is in furrow a good option?
Well, I just hate all these answers that start with it depends, but it depends, and that would be the source. And if we were going to use like an ATS, or we have a product called Access that we do not recommend in furrow, but we have another product called Enhance. It's almost 9% sulfur. It's a different formulation. It also has some micronutrients. That is safe in furrow. I mean, I put up to a gallon in furrow. I mean, that'd be a little steep, but running 1 to 2 quarts as a sulfur source. I've had excellent results with that as a sulfur source.
Yep.
So that's a product I would put in.
Yeah, you can see, though, why I asked the question, because as soon as you mentioned sulfur and in furrow, I'm like, hey, wait a second here. Not every sulfur source is going to work for you in furrow, and we don't want guys hurting their seed. All right, how about micronutrients then? How do you feel about micronutrients in the furrow?
Well, micronutrients is probably really the only place you should put them, I think. Because, again, micro, you're putting on lower rates. You want to put it where the roots are. The roots aren't over 15 inches. They're right there with the seed. And we're not using in-furrow micronutrients as a soil amendment. We're using that as a plant feed.
Yep.
And so in order to get the most use out of it, put it where they're feeding, and that's where the roots are. And so I like our Micro 500 blend. Has a blend of 5 micronutrients. We see a synergistic effect. And just like we've been talking about earlier, you say, well, I may not need copper. Why do you have copper in there? Well, you don't know every speck of ground. Maybe there is a piece of ground that has in that field that might benefit from some copper in there. And so, zinc and manganese and a little bit of boron are the main core nutrients, but it also has some iron and copper. You may not need them, but you might, and you don't know it. But we also see that being a synergistic response. And so micronutrients to feed the plant need to be in furrow, in my opinion.
Hey, we've been working with some of your micro EX. It's got 10 different micronutrients. You mentioned 5, but I wanted to talk to you real quick. What do you think about the micro EX and having those extra nutrients in there that we don't talk about very often, like even molybdenum?
Yeah, the micro EX, I'm glad you brought that up. That has some, that pretty much is like the kitchen sink. I mean, If that plant's going to need something, it's going to be, more than just the N, P, and K. If it's going to need something, it's going to be in that micro EX. It's got magnesium and cobalt, molybdenum, and that sort of thing. All these things that, you're not going to see a response to all of that every year, but somewhere in your field, you're going to come across an area that would benefit from molybdenum or cobalt. And so then you would have it. So having those 10 secondary and micronutrient products in there, that'd be even better yet.
Yeah, I know it was something Darren mentioned, and he didn't have a lot of time to kind of explain just in an earlier segment in the show, but he was just making the point that you want to test one thing at a time, basically, so you can figure out kind of what works. But that's the other way to look at it, is go to the complete other end of the spectrum. I'm not exactly sure which micronutrient's going to pay. I'm going to use very low rates of 10 of them, and then hopefully at least one of the 10 pays more than enough that I can make this a good return on investment thing. Well, we've been talking to Jerry Willem with AgriLiquid. Jerry, thanks a lot for spending so much time with us today. We really, really appreciate it.
Well, I always enjoy being on. Thank you. Bye.
You bet. Thanks.
Talk about what you should be putting in furrow on corn, and I know Jerry's really an expert on the fertility side, but there are quite a few different things.
Yeah, that's something that we've been doing for years. We are big believers in putting a little bit of fertilizer in there. We also put insecticide on every corn acre that we have. Now, we're going to vary the rate. If it was conventional corn, we'd go full rate. If it's traded corn, we're probably at least going to go a half rate, I would say. But we're going to have something there, so we have more than just the
trait. A little more aggressive on that than you are,
yep,
Brian.
Yeah, that's right. And then fungicide, our research has shown it pays when it's cold. When it's not cold, it could go either way on that.
Got a number of questions in for the Ag PhD mailbag. We'll get to those after this. Stay tuned.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Ideal for herbicide applications, the Ultra Low Drifts Large Air Inducted Droplets were designed to eliminate driftable fines without sacrificing coverage. Its thick three-dimensional pattern creates multiple angles for the spray to cover the target. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. AgriLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
Come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. And that's right. We are in the Ag PhD mailbag time. All right, get a question
forget,
from...
Forget where we were
nope,
there, dear.
I just grabbed my first email I wanted to address. Well, and I started reading it because it's quick. It's a real short question, but it's really important, okay, too. This one comes about one of our upcoming meetings. It said, hey, are you guys still offering dicamba application training
yes.
at one of your workshops?
Yes. Right after our workshop, not as part of our workshop, but right after our workshop, there is going to be dicamba training, and that is on February 18th. It'll start at 3:15, and it lasts for, I don't know, hour and a half, 2 hours.
So next
like
Monday.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. It starts at 3:15, yep. goes for, yeah, maybe
now, here's,
however
here's,
long it takes.
Yep. Two things that you need to know if you're listening today. Number one, in the United States, you're required to have this dicamba training every year if you are going to spray dicamba in your Xtend crops. The second thing you need to know is this training will be held in the state of South Dakota because it's right at our Ag PhD Field Day site. And we've got a workshop earlier that day. We actually have a workshop the next day, too. You can check out all the details on agphd.com. But here's my point. It's in South Dakota. Well, South Dakota has reciprocity with North Dakota, Minnesota, and Nebraska. For some reason, Iowa requires applicators to take dicamba training in Iowa, even though the training is exactly the same, probably even put on by the same trainers. But for some reason, yep, we're 15, 20 miles away from Iowa, and the state of Iowa doesn't feel that's good enough. So I don't know why, but just so you know, if you're from Iowa, you don't want to come to our training and then go, oh no, I sat through this and now I got to sit through it again in the state of Iowa. But for Nebraska, Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota, you can come here to get your training. It's free, and it's going to be right after our Ag PhD workshop next Monday, February 18th.
All right. Thanks for the question. We appreciate that. I got two questions from Chris. He said, number one, he said you were talking about harvest loss on your show the other day, and I just wanted you to know I've got more loss from animals than about anything else that I can think of.
Oh, we have a little of that, too, down on our river bottom ground.
Yep. No, we definitely aren't immune to that as well. But he said, that was, I guess, comment and a question. The question is, and speaking about soybeans, what would be a reasonable population that we should be planting just a round number to begin with?
140,000 plants per acre. That's my round number if you want one. I'm going to up the population if I've got iron deficiency chlorosis, if I am real worried about my germination or my stand or, you know, I've got other environmental issues. I may lower the population if I'm concerned about sclerotinia white mold. I know my germination and my cold germ are fantastic and I've invested a lot of money in a really good seed treatment. I might cut it a little bit, but 140,000 is a good starting point.
All right, thanks for the question. I got another one here from Brandon, and Brandon said, I hear you talking to a lot of growers with corn and soybeans and wheat about soil samples. I'm wondering, would you guys be interested in looking at some soil samples from my turf grass farm located in northwest Georgia?
Sure. Did he send some?
He didn't, but yeah, Brandon, sure. go ahead and send us some samples. If you've got specific questions, you know, ask us what you're thinking about.
Or we look at them every day.
Yeah, we would love to take a look at those for you if we can help you out. Okay, I get a question from Tennessee. The question is, what's the best way to raise potassium levels? I've been putting on potash, but it doesn't seem to be helping, and I'm afraid that high rates may be hard on my soil, so I'm looking for different options.
Well, there are a lot of ways you can get potassium out there. We'd love to see manure or compost used. If you could use those sources, that'd be great. You could also use something like potassium sulfate. I mean, there are plenty of ways to get, we talked earlier about liquid, sure, K, lots of ways to get potassium out in the field. But the whole thing is, I want you to use the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app and take a look at your crops and your yields and find out how much potassium are you actually removing. Because in a lot of cases, we talk to farmers who go, oh, wow, I didn't realize I was taking that much out of the ground in a 2-year cycle or a 5-year period or whatever. So I'm going to guess, I don't know for sure, but I'm just going to guess, you haven't been putting on enough. I know that was certainly the case on our farm. We've got that corrected now, and now our yields are a lot better.
All right, thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. Got one from Mac, and also saw a comment on Twitter from Kevin about moldboard plows. And Kevin said, I didn't even realize that they still made moldboard plows. And Mac said, why are farmers still choosing to use them? What are the benefits?
I'll tell you a little story. Almost every winter when we do our workshops, I'm traveling around the country, and I'll have some farmer kind of pull me to the side at the end of our meeting just about as I'm about to leave. And he'll go, Brian, I hated to even say this around anybody else, but I pulled out the moldboard plow from the trees last year, and you know what? That was my best yield that I had on the whole farm. I think I'm going to do more acres again this next year. Here's the whole thing. When you moldboard plow, you are releasing a lot of heat from the soil. You are basically breaking down soil organic matter faster. When you do those couple of things, so you've got warmer soil and now you've got more organic matter breaking down, that means you have more nutrients available. And so at least in the short term, things look phenomenal. Unfortunately, in the long term, when you burn up your soil's organic matter, that's not a good thing. So yes, if you say, I'm gonna farm this ground one more year, that's it. And I don't care what I do to the ground. All I know is I want top yield. I don't care about soil erosion. I'm not worried about building the soil. Nothing. I have no concerns other than I have to have top yield. I have plenty of time to go out and do the tillage. Should I moldboard plow or not? My answer is, well, you sure can if you want to. Now, is that the best long-term strategy? No, I would not do that. But in the short term, it's great. So that's the reason why people will use it. And sometimes people aren't looking at the long term. They're just simply looking at the short term. And I totally get it, because in many cases, you will have more yield if you haven't been doing full-scale tillage, and now you do decide to pull out the moldboard plow. Oh, and I realize that probably just made all kinds of people mad, but sorry, that's a fact of the matter. And if you don't believe that, try it on your farm
just,
on 2 acres.
Just always with everything you're doing with agriculture, there's probably a benefit and there's probably a negative. And so there's lots of different ways you can do things. Personally, I think a lot of times the negatives outweigh the positives on some of that deep tillage, but there certainly can be some ways that that could be a benefit as well. Thanks for the feedback. Really appreciate that. Come on from Randy. He said, my question is, does sludge from sewage treatment plants, when either mixed or composted, help the ground or does it hurt the ground? I was thinking about getting a load and composting it for my garden.
Almost all the time, it's going to help the ground. That is just like manure that we would talk about from livestock. It's most likely going to help the ground. What you need to check for is heavy metals. There are guidelines. We talk about them at some of our Ag PhD workshops. Otherwise, you can go to the EPA's website and they will give you what the guidelines are for heavy metals that you can and should have in your soil. So as long as you're not exceeding that, you should be in good shape.
All right. Thanks for the question. We appreciate that.
Hey, one last thing. Sorry. Use all forms of manure, all forms of fertilizer. I'm going to lump manure and fertilizer all together. Use those always in moderation. If you overdo anything, it can cause problems.
All right. Thanks for that question. I got one here. This one is from Kevin. And he said, I'm thinking about using a biological seed treatment, and there's a lot of different ones to look at.
Yep.
So I was considering a couple of them. One of them being a biological I hear you speak of, Quick Ritz.
Yep.
And my question is, who owns the Quick Ritz product now? And do they have a web presence where I can find more information?
Yes, that would be, it's the Monsanto BioAg
it's
department.
It's gone through a transition here. Because
now Bayer owns it.
Yeah, because the company that was marketing the product, Monsanto, and Monsanto BioAg, they got bought out by Bayer. So now it falls into the Bayer spectrum.
But we really like Quick Ritz. We've done a lot of work with it over the years. Fantastic product.
Well, and this is another thing where you can certainly find it. I just Googled it just out of curiosity. I thought, huh, I wonder if I'll just Google it and find stuff. And I find all kinds of videos and different things about it. And even stuff that we've written up about our use of that particular product on our farm. So I know there's lots of information out there, but you're right, Kevin. There are so many different biological type products out there. Sometimes it's hard to sort through that.
You're right. So on our farm right now, for example, we are using Decomp. We're using Heat Shield, we're using Nutricycle. We are still using probably a little bit of Quick Ritz again this year. There are some plant growth hormones we're using. We're experimenting with a number of other products as well. So I think we're really on just the tip of the iceberg here when it comes to all these biologicals. You're going to see a lot more going forward.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Kevin. We really appreciate that. And thanks to everybody who wrote in with questions today. We get a lot of questions. I know many times it's a weekend or an evening and you're thinking about an agronomic topic. Just send us an email, radio@agphd.com. And whether it's a soil sample or just some text you want to put down, we'd love to try and help you out on your farm. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.